Good morning. This is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. It is Friday, May 13th, 2022, and this is your one-take reading of the May 13th post, Why Don't All Injuries Hurt? Five Theories. I am continuing to do these things in one take, and I think that that is working out surprisingly well so far. So far, I haven't had a case of a flub so bad that I felt I had to mark it and edit it out or re-record. Now that I've said that, no doubt it's going to happen. I'm sure it will happen. At some point, I'm going to say something so ridiculously or so awkwardly that I think, yeah, I just got to re-record that. But it hasn't happened yet, amazingly. I have started embedding these audio versions directly in post content. This is kind of a compromise between what I was doing and an actual podcast. It's not a podcast, but it's getting close, because anywhere that you're looking at a post, you can click play and start listening, including the RSS feed. And a podcast is nothing but an audio only RSS feed. So we're really close, really knocking on the door of podcast without quite going in and just embracing it. But the thing I don't know is this actually working? If anyone's having any technical issues with this setup, if the embedded audio isn't playing, please let me know. As far as I can tell in my testing, it is happening. Everywhere that I've gone and every device I've got and every software that I've got for reading the posts, it's working. But there's a lot of different technology out there. So if you've had some issues with it, I really do want to know so that I can fix it. And finally, I thought it would be nice if you could, you know, find these audio versions. So posts with audio versions are now marked wherever posts are listed. So for instance, painscience.com/microblog, I think /newsletter works as well. You get a giant post list going back a decade. And just recently, some of them are marked with a little speaker emoji, so you can clearly see that they have audio attached. And probably soon I will even create a filter on that page, finally, so that you can narrow the post list down to things you're interested in, such as only the ones with audio. And now that I've said that out loud, it's suddenly a much higher priority on my to-do list. All right, on with the post. Let's get this post started. Why don't all injuries hurt? Five theories. So here's the setup. Experiences that I think almost everybody has had at one point. If you ever had a cut that you didn't even notice, like literally didn't know, maybe you noticed the scab later, but you didn't know it was happening when it happened, and it didn't bother you. You just like, oh, look, I must have cut myself. But then the next cut that you get throbs for 3 days. What is the difference between those two cuts? Or another one I like, and this one has happened to me many times, is the hangnail that just suddenly starts to hurt. You didn't even know it was there, but once it starts hurting, from that moment on, it's like you can feel individual molecules banging into it. It's so sensitive. What changed? How can you be not aware of something one moment, and then the next moment it's like, oh my God, that stupid little thing hurts? Or, and this is something we're going to build the post around a little bit, have you ever torn your knee cartilage and had no idea? Science says probably not that you would know this without a home MRI machine. So, puzzlingly painless knee injuries. The meniscus of the knee is an error-prone little cartilage widget in your knee. It's a little C-shaped disc, one on each side of the knee, of cartilage, and it just cups the femur a little bit, gives the top of the tibia a little bit more shape, a little bit more of a socket, and that anatomical shim seems to tear as easily as damp origami, enough to support a whole subspecialty of orthopedic surgery. I wouldn't be surprised if orthopedic surgeries for knees are, you know, the most common kind of orthopedic surgery, and probably not the most common kind of surgery, but almost for sure the most popular orthopedic surgery. So sometimes those meniscal lesions hurt like the dickens, and sometimes they don't, which is what this post is all about. Zanetti et al. say, quote, Horizontal or oblique meniscal tears are frequently encountered in both asymptomatic and symptomatic knees. Other types of meniscal lesions, by the way, are almost always symptomatic for the record, but these two kinds, the horizontal and the oblique, which are very common, they are very inconsistent. So this is not fresh news, not even close. That's a 2003 study that I was quoting from. It was highlighted by a colleague on Twitter recently, quote unquote recently. This post stewed in my drafts for quite a while before I published. So by the time I've gotten to reading this out loud, that is no longer a recent tweet. But so a colleague of mine tweeted that, got me thinking about how there are lots of studies showing generally lousy correlation between imaging results of lesions that should hurt but often don't. And that's always fascinating data, and I've made a lot of hay out of this over the years. I've written about it from several different angles, and here's a new one. What interests me here today is, what is the X factor? Why do some of those hurt and so many others literally don't even know that they have a problem? What is the difference? What? I mean, I am tired of not knowing this. I have been noticing this phenomenon for at least 15 years, probably even further back in a more trivial way, but, you know, like taking a professional interest in it for a long time, and I don't have good ideas about why it is this way, he says, right before giving some ideas. I guess I do. I have some ideas. I don't know how good they are, but I have some ideas. So let's talk about those. How injuries hide from awareness. Five hypotheses. So just spitballing here. I mean, like, this is not a known thing. I'm just guessing. I am going to lean on the term nociception here quite a bit. So quick review, nociception is the conversion of potentially noxious stimuli into nerve impulses, which may or may not lead to pain. Okay, so that's nociception review, and it comes up several times over these 5 points. So first idea is, it's the dumb luck of position and timing. Sometimes a lesion just doesn't cause any significant nociception, or it hasn't yet. Anyway, maybe most asymptomatic people are in trouble 6 months later. Has anyone checked that? I'm talking about the people with the torn menisci that they can't feel. Maybe they can feel it down the road. And has anyone checked that? Not that I am aware of. Change over time is probably the biggest missing data point in this puzzle. Next idea. Oh, wait, actually, before I go on, dumb luck of position and timing. Another thing I mean by that is I strongly suspect that a lot of small cuts, that some cuts are painless because they literally just dodge the neurons. On the one hand, that's always seemed like an absurd theory to me, because if you know your neurology, it's really hard to avoid nerve endings. They are thick. They are everywhere, but it's probably possible. There are probably some cuts that just by chance literally just don't hit as many nerve endings, and so there's less nociception to deal with. I've always wondered that, and I don't think I'll ever know if that's actually how it works, but it is a possibility. Next point, number two, idea number two, people are different from each other, as we know. Some people probably just get less nociception out of the same lesion because on average they're less prone to inflammation and peripheral sensitization, which is in turn a function of everything from genetics to insomnia. Systemic biological differences almost certainly account for why some injuries are painless. And I'll give as an example here, this is something that's so easy to do in audio, where I don't have the burden of having to get the citation exactly right. If I was going to write this down in the post, I'd have to, like, okay, I got to go off to my bibliography and find that study and cite it. And it's, what a drag. But here in audio, I can just mention it. I forget the gene or even the name of the syndrome, but there is a gene that makes people, literally just makes them more, increases, It's on the tip of my tongue. Somatic something. Anyway, stronger bodily sensations from genetics. You just literally feel your body more than other people. Not necessarily pain, but probably pain included. So that's a very good example of how people can be different from each other. There are people who feel things more intensely in their bodies. Number three, hypothesis number three. People are not only different from each other, they are different from themselves. You are not the animal that you were yesterday, or the animal that you'll be tomorrow or in 6 months. The only difference between a lesion that's painless on Tuesday and a misery on Wednesday might be changes in biology, the constantly shifting tides. And I just remembered, I hadn't thought about this word in ages, biorhythms, I think. Maybe it's a, I don't, I guess, the vague memory that that's associated with some bizarre quackery. Or maybe it's just a perfectly cromulent term referring to the constantly shifting tides of biology. I suspect if there's quackery attached to that, it's the idea that you can know it or track it. You know, that the biorhythms are knowable and maybe manipulatable. There's probably some garbage ideas about that out there. But the basic idea that our biology is, you know, as inconstant as the ocean, always moving, always changing, that seems very reasonable to me. And there are some obvious reasons why it could shift fairly dramatically in a short period of time. Like for instance, something I am feeling today, sleep deprivation. I'm a champion insomniac throughout my whole life, but I've had several pretty decent weeks lately, and then just suddenly 3 nights, 3 nights ago, everything went to hell. So right now, my biology probably pretty different from my biology last week. Infection is another big one. It doesn't even have to be an obvious one. It could be an infection you don't even know you have. That happens surprisingly often. And the tides of hormones, we're all buffeted by that. Ooh, and I just realized that's using the metaphor of tides twice in one paragraph. Not awesome, so I'll have to edit that out. Let's see, to finish this up, for every obvious reason, there are dozens more. I mentioned sleep deprivation, infection, and hormones. That's nothing. There are dozens more subtle biological factors constantly fading in and out. So people are different from themselves. So far, we've got dumb luck of position and timing. People are different from each other, and people change over time themselves. Theory number four, top-down modulation. Sometimes the brain probably just takes nociception less seriously for many neurological, psychological, and contextual reasons. Nociception is not an absolute. Just because you have nociception does not mean you have pain. Nociception is a suggestion, and pain is weird. The brain doesn't have to believe that there's a problem, but it's more likely to do so in some situations than others. So, for instance, the brain almost certainly takes nociception more seriously when it occurs in previously traumatized anatomy. Lesions are much more likely to be asymptomatic if they're the first lesion in an area. Now, that's some very high-level spitballing. There are problems with what I just said, but it's also sort of beyond the scope of this. The idea is just to point us in a direction and say that top-down modulation, that the central nervous system and the brain, you know, responding differently to the same input in different situations is probably a thing. Lots of devils in those details, but the general idea, it seems sound to me that the brain probably accounts for some of the differences, why some things hurt sometimes and not others. Last item number five, thresholds and boiling frogs. A sudden flood of nociception, there it is again, more nociception, a sudden flood of it, probably harder for the CNS to breezily ignore that. It is possible that lesions that develop slowly literally just don't get noticed. But when they do get noticed, when they cross some cryptic threshold, the pain experience rapidly intensifies. An analogy. You don't notice an annoying thumping stereo neighbor noise at first, but once you do notice it, it rapidly and very obnoxiously takes over your consciousness. Has it actually gotten louder? No. Are you more aware of it? You bet. So there seems to be some kind of process by which noticing a thing, we transition very suddenly into much higher awareness of it, which in the case of pain, I think it's hard for us to distinguish. Maybe it's even literally the same thing. Maybe they're synonymous, that a greater awareness of pain is to have more pain, for it to hurt more. If you're more aware of it, it actually hurts more, or it's like it hurts more. That's what I'm talking about. One of those two possibilities. And the idea that higher awareness is actually equivalent to more pain is an interesting idea that I never thought of before. Stealth injuries now. So the boiling frog factor is probably huge, but even sudden trauma can still fall below the brain's threshold of concern when the conditions are just right. Amazingly and famously, in some cases, people can fail to notice acute lesions that would be quite painful at other times or in other people. When I polled my Twitter followers on this, good old scientific Twitter poll, a whopping 70% claim to have had minor injuries that they literally didn't know about until much later. And 22% reported surprisingly bad stealth injuries, significant contusions, abrasions, lacerations, fractures, and tears. My brain really wanted to read that word as tears for some reason. Lacerations, fractures, and tears. But it's tears, muscle tears. Only 6% of my followers thought that they'd never had a stealth injury. I would be willing to bet that a lot of patients with fibromyalgia have never failed to notice an injury. Injuries that are never stealthy. So there's got to be limits to our ability to not notice trauma because some sources of nociception are just too huge, too intense to ever be stealthy. And I would think that burns are a fine example of that. I truly doubt that anyone has ever had a third degree burn larger than the head of a pin that didn't hurt like hell. And actually, now that I think about it, even the head of a pin. Imagine a red hot pin head. I think you'd notice that. I guess you might not in certain contexts, and that's what this is about. I'm saying that there are some burns, there are larger burns. Doesn't matter what the context is. Doesn't matter if you're a medieval blacksmith who's used to getting little burns all the time, enough of a third degree burn, you're going to notice, no matter who you are, no matter the situation. Another example, kidney stones and pancreatic cancer, appendicitis. These are all probably similarly impossible to not notice or ignore. Visceral pain is in a league all of its own, and maybe for very obvious evolutionary reasons that. Either the viscera produce a lot more nociception and or the brain is has evolved to take that much more seriously because visceral pain is serious. That if you've got trouble with your guts, you need to sit the heck down. And so your brain makes sure of it with a nice big pain experience. But even some much more trivial injuries than this are consistently painful. For instance, and this is the example that has fascinated me my whole life, long before I was interested in this stuff professionally, I noticed that toe stubs seem to always hurt a lot, albeit briefly, despite the fact that they are trivial in terms of tissue damage. So I get to the end of this post here, and I realize that it's kind of ends abruptly. And I feel like there should be some kind of extra here that I haven't written yet, but there's not. So that's the end. Those are my five ideas. The dumb luck of position and timing. People are different from each other. People are different from themselves over time. Top-down modulation and thresholds and boiling frogs. Those are my five ideas for why injuries hurt sometimes and not others, even when they seem extremely similar. If you have any ideas, please let me know. I do like to hear from my readers. As full as my inbox is, I read everything, and you're very welcome to drop me a line and say hi and give me your idea for why do injuries sometimes not hurt.